Hello and welcome back to Sin. You're here with Sandy on New and Approved, Sin's home of fresh new music from around the world. Today in the studio, we're graced by the presence of London-based artist Eloise, whose honey-like voice and hard-on-her-sleeve lyrics first captivated the world in 2019 with the release of her debut EP, This Thing Called Living. 2 years later, she recorded her 2021 sophomore EP, Somewhere in Between, with Bruno Major. And today, Eloise is here to talk about her newly released debut album, Drunk on a Flight, a gorgeous 12-track collection which leans into her pop sensibilities while holding onto her jazzy roots and embodying that emotional sincerity that we've come to expect from her music. Welcome, Eloise. Thank you so much for coming on the show today.
Thanks for having me. What an intro.
I am really excited to chat to you. It has been such a whirlwind couple of days for you.
Yeah.
And to kind of set the scene for our listeners, I mean, when they hear this interview, the album will have just come out. But
yes.
We're actually talking a little bit ahead of the release, a few weeks ahead, while you're here in Australia.
Mm-hmm.
Had to make the most of it.
Yeah.
And you had a show last night in Melbourne, which I had the great pleasure of attending.
I did have a show last night.
Yeah.
It's pretty wild. I made a pretty ropey decision to stay on UK time while I've been here because it's such a short trip.
Yeah.
So I've been slightly delusional by the time the show's come about, because that's basically midnight in my head. Oh, no, it's not. It's the crack of dawn in my head, actually. So I'm rolling out of bed and then going on stage and trying to be a show person.
Oh, you did so well, though. And
Thank you.
I said to you last night, the way that you held the room with just, because it was a solo show, it was just you, your voice and your instrument, and everyone was just so captivated by it. And it was a sold out show as well. You obviously have a really strong audience here.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's kind of fairly recent, the amount of listeners over this side of the planet. But I think also the standard of people who come to my shows is just so great. They have such good etiquette, show etiquette. They're really it's so great. They always get there early and listen to the support act, which I think is such a beautiful thing. And they listen to the support act. And they're so engaged and they're real lyric listeners. I think you kind of have to be if you like my music. So it means it's such a beautiful thing every time I do a show. It's so nice and you can see it mean stuff to people and then it means stuff to me all over again. These songs that I've grown tired of listening to and playing all of a sudden get a new surge of life. It's a magical thing.
That was sweet that you played some of your older songs last night as well, because as you said, this is your first time coming to Australia and so your fans here haven't had a chance to hear those live before.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think that's important. As I said last night, I think I was slightly delusional, but I love going to gigs. I love music. I'm not someone who has become jaded by her job of being in it. And I love when I go and see an artist and it's as much about the fans and the listeners as it is about them having a nice time. It has to be a balance. And I just wanted to make sure that some of these people have been there since the beginning. They just haven't heard me live, and that's since I was 18. I was 18, so that's 5 years ago. That's when they started listening. So it's fair. Let me play the old ones, for them.
Yeah, that's lovely. And I mean, even speaking from personal experience, I have loved your music since 2019, that first EP. So to hear those live was really special, and to hear everyone in the crowd singing along.
Yeah, that was lovely, wasn't it? Yeah,
really great to be a part of. But yeah, as you said, this is a very quick stint that you're having here. You're flying back to the UK tonight.
Yes.
That's
this afternoon.
That is crazy.
Yeah.
Yeah. Actually, speaking of getting on a flight, I want to talk to you about this theme of airplanes that crops up throughout the album. Obviously, the title track is Drunk on a Flight. Also on track 7, I Take It Back, you kind of set the scene as being on a flight. Can you tell everyone a little bit about the significance of that?
So I think I've been trying to figure out the best way to put this, but I mean, a lot of all the major things that have happened love related have always happened around when I'm flying away somewhere or flying back somewhere. And they've all been real it's almost like the plane is taking me to the next chapter of my life, basically, is what it feels like. And that's been the way since I first left on my first ever tour. The morning that I flew away, me and my boyfriend that I'd been with from 13 to 18, we broke up that morning, and then I flew away to LA, and like that was what Drunk on a Flight was about, and I got drunk on the flight and wrote down all my feelings. And gradually over the years, as I got drunk on more flights and was heartbroken on more flights, this list of lyrics and thoughts became this album. Mm. But it's always, I feel like I have some of my most profound thoughts on planes, because you have loads of time to think. And especially in like, in I Take It Back, that's another type of vulnerability I have on a plane, which is like, I'm, you know, if I'm really scared of flying, and when there's any turbulence in my head, I'm like, let me make peace with everyone. Let me like make friends in my brain with everyone that I'm not friends with or whatever. So it's, I don't know, it's just become a big part of my life.
Mm. I completely understand what you're saying about having time to think, and that if you think of like airplanes and even airports as well, they hold such symbolic power of like transition and discovery, journey, change.
Yeah.
And in another sense as well, we go on an emotional journey with you through this album too, with you exploring ideas of love and relationships and heartaches. And then to end it with Tired Now, which is like, you've just done all this emotional labor, you've just processed all these things.
Yeah.
And then it's like, okay, let's put this to rest.
Yeah, exactly. Like, that's the funeral.
Yeah.
You know, you go through all the grieving and stuff, and then you make your peace, you put the flowers on the grave, and you move on.
Mm.
Yeah, I mean, I think it was accidentally a journey album. I mean, it helped that I wrote all the songs in one big bundle at this same time, like live time of me processing, you know, a heartbreak that I was going through, essentially.
Mm.
So that was always kind of going to naturally take shape in this fixing myself kind of album. But I like the idea of ending it on I'm Tired Now rather than ending it on like this ultra happy note, which is unrealistic, really.
Yeah.
After you have made peace with something that's massive that's happened to you, you're not ecstatic, you're exhausted for a bit, and then you're brought back to life after that, but you have to just like go like exhale for the first time, basically, because you've been doing all the work. And I wanted it to be real, I guess, but that's what every musician says, I suppose.
No, it does. Like, it's interesting the way that it tells a story, even though last night you did say that you're not really a concept album type of artist, but there does seem to be some intention behind the track listing, at least from like the opening song to the end song.
Mm.
But what about the stuff in the middle? Did you have to rearrange things quite a bit? Did they fall into place quite naturally?
Some fell into place naturally. I mean, it is never that hard for me to figure out the order that the songs go in. It seems like a daunting task until it more or less presents itself. There has to be a balance, like with anything, but you have to, sometimes certain songs sound good going into the next song and it has to be like a sonic moment, and then other times it's quite a nice little kind of arc. And there's a couple of moments, I think Make It Better goes into Forgive You, and I wrote them on the same day as each other, and they're in the same key, and they're kind of about the same argument, but from the beginning of it to the end of it. So, and, you know, they've, as I said, they're in the same key, so putting those together was like, great, jackpot, they're both the things.
Yeah, but, like a continuation.
Mm-hmm, exactly, yeah. Part one, part two.
Mm.
But the rest, it was all just based on gut and whatever felt right to listen through to it all, you know.
Mm. Yeah, kind of based off intuition a little bit, yeah. As well as the emotional journey that we go on, there's also this side of your personal creative journey in making this album, because it is really cool to hear you exploring these different aspects of your musicality and kind of trying different, or like widening your palette a little bit. There's the pop influence, but then if you think of something like Vanilla Tobacco, that has like quite an R&B sound to it as well. And as you said before, you wrote these in kind of a bulk, which, as I understand, was like a 6-month period.
Yeah, it was a 3-month period.
3 months?
Yeah, the other 3 months was the making it.
Oh my God, that's insane.
It's a very quick turnaround. Yeah, it was a big year. Last year was a big year for me. I reckon it was probably the best year of my life so far.
Yeah.
I was thinking about that the other day. I was like,
Are you a little bit tired now?
yeah, I definitely am. I realized that. I think I realized those things simultaneously. I was like, last year was one of the best years of my life because so much happened, and now I'm knackered.
Yeah, and now you're about to head off on this huge tour.
That's okay.
But you have 2 months off between now and June to just sleep.
Exactly. No, it's a really friendly schedule, you know. It's good. I'm lucky.
Yeah. But yeah, what did kind of inspire you to try out these different sounds? I know you talked about getting into the studio with one of your friends in LA and trying to write a pop song.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, I've written the same way forever. I'll probably always write the same way lyrically. But I think what had started to happen after lockdown was I was writing songs that I liked, but I was just like, either something in the neighborhood of I'm not pushing myself anymore. I don't feel like I'm branching out, and I don't want to just stay in this realm. And I just felt that, and that kind of gave me writer's block. I got in my own way, and it was driving me insane. And I was simultaneously going through the breakdown of a relationship, which wasn't helping. It was super distracting and too raw to write about.
Mm.
And so I think subconsciously I was looking for a way into something new. And when I went and spent some time in LA straight after that hideous breakup, and I missed my flight home to London. So I was moping around on my friend's sofa for a couple of days, and he just called me in. He was like, "Oi, stop moping. Come to the studio. Let's write a pop song just for fun. Like, let's do it." Because we've always listened to pop together. We love it, but I was never like thinking I could do it.
Mm.
And we got in the room and we wrote a really good pop song, and it was so much fun. And I had that thing. I was so buzzed. I think I left at like 4 a.m. We all left, and I hadn't been that energized in so long. Like, I just felt like I'd got this new toolkit to do my thing, but even better.
Mm.
And so, you know, as soon as I got like on the plane to get back to London, I was like writing all these mad ideas I had and stuff. I was like, great. Well, I'm not in my own way anymore. And the second I got back to London, I was super jet lagged. I threw everything down and grabbed my guitar. And then I just didn't stop writing from then on.
Wow.
It was so much fun. And I owe the album really to my friend Max trying to get me out of bed, basically.
Everyone needs a friend like Max.
Yeah, he's a good one. He's always the one who's like, get up, we're going out, we're having fun now.
Mm. Do you ever think about, though, how different things might be if you hadn't missed that flight? Because that feels like such a, like, there's so much serendipity in that idea.
Totally.
That, oh, you missed this flight, and because of that, you went to the studio, and because of that, this whole album came out of that.
Exactly, and that's, again, like, back to the flight thing. It's like, then the next big thing that happened was, you know, I had no intention of writing my first album now. It's just like, I'll write songs, and if I have enough that make up an album, I'll have an album, and if I don't, I'll have another EP. And missing that flight meant that I am now putting out my debut album, like, that tiny thing that felt like the biggest disaster in the world completely changed the trajectory of the next bit of my life. And it's so wild, that, you know. So I'm very grateful to those sorts of hiccups.
It's a very special thing.
Yeah.
Yeah. But kind of related as well to the way that that whole process changed how you think about creating music. Something that I found interesting that you mentioned last night was coming to terms with short songs, and the fact that you often find yourself like writing a short song, and at first you thought that was a negative thing, but then you came to realize that it's okay to have said everything that you need to say, and to not have to, as you said, overexpose an emotion or, you know, a feeling or whatever it is.
I mean, I always wrote interludes. I think sometimes it was because I was lazy and I couldn't be bothered to find the next bit, but a lot of the other times it was because I was too intimidated. Like, something that happens to me a lot is I'll write what I think is an excellent first verse, and then you've got the terrifying task of writing a second verse that's as good or better, and then I'm just like, no, I'll close that chapter and we'll come back to that another day. Never do. But then sometimes I have these songs like Trick of the Moon, which was always very short, and there was a very definite feeling of like, I'm not going to write anymore. This is exactly how long it needs to be. It doesn't feel that short because you've gone on a significant journey in the song. You've explored that feeling fully, because some feelings aren't that big. And I think that's important to know, like, to differentiate between whether you're being lazy or whether you're actually serving the song in the right way.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I think your ability to say so much with so little is kind of your superpower, because you'll have these lines in your song that just, it's one line and it just cuts you.
Like, oh, I love that. That's such good feedback. That's always what I want to be able to do.
Yeah, absolutely. And it's interesting because you always seem to capture such emotional sincerity with your lyrics, even in songs that aren't necessarily based on lived experience.
Yeah.
Like, I read that Giant Feelings was based on a fictionalized story.
Yeah.
Yeah. Is that something, like, do you often write from a place of, like, making up something, or is it usually...
No, it's always about me. the classic narcissistic trait of a songwriter, but, no, they're always normally about me. I don't know what it was about Giant Feelings. There was something, I mean, that was the first song I wrote for the album. After that was the one I wrote literally having landed it back in London. And it was almost like I really wanted to write a bit of an Aggie song, and I really found that feeling fascinating, that thing of like, where does the love go now, basically? And I was so frightened of like blocking myself, I think, again, and getting stuck again, that I was like, just make something up. It's okay. You've learned that your rules don't need to be rules. They can just be little tools you tap into and stuff. You can cherry pick. So I was like, oh, I actually don't need to write about myself right now. As long as I can empathize enough with the characters I'm talking about, or essentially it is still me, I'm talking about myself, what I would be like in that situation. But I think this whole process of making it has been very much about letting go and like not being so worried about what I think something should be, and then letting it be what it should be. If I was worried, the whole album would sound completely different.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, definitely. And I mean, if you think about it, like authors, if they're writing fiction, it doesn't mean that it's not sincere and that they don't live that while they're writing it as well.
Exactly.
Yeah. But also the music video for Giant Feelings is so great. I understand all done in like one shot.
Yes.
Yeah.
Crazy. Yeah. We filmed it at like 4 a.m. We basically flew to LA to shoot that. And we did like a rehearsal the day before. We like blocked off this like area of the hike in, I think, East Hollywood, maybe not Hollywood, who knows. And it was, I mean, it was a really small crew, a little rain machine for when it rains. And we blocked it out, and then we all got there at like 4 a.m. We had to be like torch led down because it was still pitch black, and we only had a certain amount of time, obviously, to catch the sun coming up, because that's why we went to LA. I was like, this song is my tribute to LA, because that was the time that, you know, sparked everything. And I wanted that LA sunrise. It's super special, that. So I think we did like 3 takes. And then the sun was up, so we had to smash it.
Wow!
And we went with like the first take, I think. But it was so it was, like wrapped by 7. It was a hilarious music video shoot.
That's crazy.
Yeah,
I'd imagine the experience of filming the Drunk on a Flight video would have been quite different. That's also gorgeous as well.
Thank you.
And I love the way, I mean, there's almost like the impression that it was also like filmed in one shot, which I know it wasn't, but really plays into that. What we were talking about with airports as well, being kind of like almost a transient space where you lose the concept of time.
Totally. It's so weird.
Yeah.
It's like a vacuum of time. And also, I've always found airports really bleak. Like, I tend to have like a little bit of a bleak lens in general. Airports, when I look around and I see the different dynamics, I don't know, there's something like lost in translation about it to me that just goes to a bit of a like somber place, and that's fascinating, you know? Everyone's a bit tired when they're at an airport, or on edge, or like, you know, zoning out, and they're not talking to their partner or whatever, or they're super excited. There's so much going on, you know? It's a fascinating place to be, especially arrivals. I cry every time I land in London Heathrow, because I will stand an extra little bit of time at arrivals and watch and see two people who've been in love and they've been separated by oceans come back together, it makes me sob.
Is that going to be you? What? How long does it take you to get home from here? A day, 2 days? It'll like, be you yeah. in like 2 days' time crying at Heathrow.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Exactly. And no one hugging me because my boyfriend can't drive. Yeah.
Oh, you can find a stranger to hug, I'm sure.
Yeah, exactly. I'll hug my manager.
Yeah. But yeah, I'm interested to know, I mean, we talked about the tour that you're going to head off on soon. There's the whole other leg that's starting off in France in June.
Mm-hmm.
So you've got a little bit of a break now between then. What are your plans? Are you going to just relax? Do you have a lot
I think I'll try and relax. Yeah. I mean, there's definitely like little, you know, worky bits and promo-y bits and stuff because the album is coming out. But I made the decision quite early on to spend as much time as I can at home doing like normal stuff.
Mm.
I went on tour so young. I was like 17 when I went on tour, and it was quite big stints of touring. And when I came back, all my friends had like gone to uni and stuff. So like, I remember feeling really strange and out of the loop. And since they've all come back, I've definitely had a real resurgence of like, oh, I'm really enjoying being like a young person who lives in London, who does the pub quiz on a Thursday and stuff like that.
Mm.
So I'm really into keeping that balance. So I'm going to just chill and like do normal stuff until I go and do an abnormal thing in June.
Yeah, it's all about the balance, isn't it?
Yeah, totally. I'm not smashing it, but I'll try my best.
Well, thank you so much for coming on the show today. It has been such a pleasure to talk to you, and I hope you have a safe flight home.
Thank
and,
you.
You know, shed as many tears as you need to.
I so will. I'm so tired that I'm going to sob the whole way. Thank you so much for your lovely questions as well.
Oh, my pleasure. To everyone listening, you can keep up to date with everything in Eloise land by following her socials at Eloise. That's Eloise with four E's in the middle. I checked.
Yeah.
I also highly recommend that you go and listen to the album, which is out now.
Mm-hmm.
Jump on a flight if you like, or a train or a bus, or just go on a long walk and listen to it from head to toe because it is beautiful and it deserves the time. You're listening to New and Approved on Sin, and this is Drunk on a Flight.